I'm an educator. I'm really not a politician, but I got into this role more or less by accident. But anyway, here I am. There are many, you know, challenges. Small island state has limited resources and many needs. And so there is a constant challenge of juggling limited resources to meet the needs and to prioritize what should be done with the limited resources. So, for example, RMI is quite, you know, small, but spread over wide or thousands of miles across the Pacific Ocean. And so having a decent transportation system is needed, and that is something that we're constantly challenged with. In order to be able to meet the needs of our outer island communities, we have to have a consistent and decent transportation system. So that's just one example, but there are many others. And Marshall Islands is challenged by our nuclear legacy, as you know. Add to that is the pressure that is brought to us by climate change, both of which are challenges not of our own making, but we have to deal with them as best we can.
Yes, in fact, on climate change, the Marshall Islands has been a real leader in the world, one of the first countries to ratify the Paris Agreement. Congratulations on being international leaders in that. How does it make you feel when you see the rest of the world, the developed countries, lagging in their efforts to make a difference in climate change?
For us, climate change is an existential threat for us. So we take it very, very seriously. And so I think it's important for us to lead in issues related to climate change. And so we try to do our best and to lead by example. We hope that by doing that, other countries will also follow and assist in this effort.
Now, returning to the fact that you're the first woman to lead an independent Pacific Island nation, are there any extra challenges doing that as a female as opposed to some of the other issues you've raised, just, you know, in terms of governing a small island state?
Well, I'm sure there are. You know, I try not to dwell on those, but, you know, when you're in a meeting with all, you know, male counterparts, you know, you're not privy to a lot of the discussion, or you cannot be because maybe, you know, it's not as easy to get into those private discussion with your counterpart. And I think sometimes people don't take women leaders seriously. The fact that more and more women are coming into positions and are proving themselves to be leaders, I think people will begin to take them seriously. But these are challenges that come with the territory, and I think all of us are aware, and we're trying to do our best. The role model for the younger girls.
Are you taken seriously in your own government?
I think so. So far, I feel that people have been very supportive, have been there for me when the need is there, and so I've been able to govern and to lead as a woman with the support of my cabinet.
Thinking about the underlying causes of inequality, some people put forward the argument that it's more important to focus on that rather than on things like boosting the numbers of women in politics or in business. Where do you stand on that in that situation?
I think both are important. We need to deal with the underlying causes of inequality. You know, there's no question about that. But at the same time, as we get more and more women into, you know, leadership, I think we're able to prove to our communities that women are just as effective leaders. And that's important. If we have very few women, you're not able to bring that to the forefront. So the numbers are important, but as you said, the underlying causes of inequality are just as important. So I think we need to deal with both together going forward.